Hey, this is Evan Longoria of your San Francisco Giants, and you're listening to TortureCast.
You're listening to a podcast by and for fans of the three-time world champion, San Francisco Giants. Let's go, Giants! Let's go, Giants! With hosts Chad King and Eric Nathanson. This is TortureCast.
It's Monday, May 2nd, 2022, and this is episode 250, wow, quarter of a thousand, of the TortureCast, the podcast by and for fans of the San Francisco Giants? I don't know. It's a team we just like, I think.
Just call them the Gents. You know, you'll get it right, one of them.
The Gents, whatever. That other voice you hear is none other than Eric Nathanson. What's going on, man?
Not much. I took the weekend off from watching Giants baseball. I took a little mini vacation with the wife, and I picked the right weekend to do it. So I'm in good spirits. I'm not bogged down by some bad Giants baseball. I'm feeling okay. How's it going for you so far over there on the injured list? How you doing on the IL?
Yeah, it's been a week and a day since the injury. The leg is better. I'm off crutches. Went to the gym for the first time today. Did a bunch of upper body exercises, you know, bench press and rows, and got on the bike and loosened it up, and the knee felt better, you know. So yeah, you know, it's going to be a long and arduous process. Again, I still won't know if I have a confirmed ACL tear until I think my MRI is next week, and then the Friday after that is when I have my appointment. So in about 2 weeks, I'll know if I'm going to need surgery or not. So
You sound in much healthier spirits this week. You definitely sound like it's not bogging you down right now. So it's good to have Chad back. Last week, I'm not saying you were sluggish, but I'm sure it was hurting a lot last week when we were recording.
Here was my new Woody, and there's the contact point for the baseball. My one and only first hit with the new Woody off the fence for, well, technically it ended up not being a double because a sniper got me about 10 feet short of the bag. So they tagged me out while I was writhing in pain, but I considered a double. Yeah, I guess I might just return all this stuff. Got my new pants because we're the Braves for this league. So, boo, I know Braves, but so I had to get white pants with the navy stripes and whatever. It is what it is. I will just continue to move on. And, you know, sometimes when life hands you lemons, you make vodka lemonade. That's what you do.
Yeah. You have to for a little bit, especially apparently after watching the Giants this week, 2-3 week. It was a rough week of Giants baseball. Like, they were not the juggernaut that started the season.
I don't think I would ever ask you this question, but I am going to now because it's a reality. But what did Luis Gonzalez, Mike Ford, Jason Crezan, Junior Marte, Mauricio Oliveira, Kaiton, Luke Williams all have in common?
I mean, they've all been claimed in the last, 24 hours?
They all actually played in a Major League Baseball game for the San Francisco Giants this week. I mean, think about that, Eric. I mean, those aren't just names that they picked up and put on the 40-man and deposited in Sacramento or Richmond. Those are all names that actually were in a Major League box score this week for the Giants. That's insane. I mean, at no point, maybe in July or August, I could have said, yeah, you know, they were decimated by injuries, but not 18 games into the season or 22 games into the season. It's a tough week. I mean, and the reason I bring that up is just, you know, people are a little concerned about the Giants. And yeah, I mean, you should be, but only from the injury standpoint and the COVID standpoint, not from, is this team going to be fine? Look what happened last year, 107 wins, and they've played 22 games. They sit at 14-8. That's a great record. It's one of the best in the National League. They're only a half game behind the Dodgers and the Padres in the National League West. And I know you already know the answer to this question, but what was their record after 22 games last year?
It happened to be 14-8.
Exactly the same. So, I mean, come on. For anyone who happens to be listening to this, you know, live or later, and by the way, welcome to those of you listening live or later. 14-8, guys, it's okay. It's okay. They're going to go play L.A. for two and then host the Cardinals for four. they're going to start getting some of these people back, and hopefully they're going to start, you know, playing well again. But yeah, it was a rough week, 2-3, but I mean, that's not like a disastrous week. So what? They lost 3 out of 5. They split against Oakland. And of course, that second game was a little hard because you had Chad Pinder hitting a solo shot to lead off the game, and then no runs after that. And so it was a very unique baseball game. How many times did you say that's happened in history?
I just looked it up. I got the list from me. Credit to Bridget on Twitter, Bridget Baseball. She's the one that looked this up for me the night that it happened. We're at 1627. That was the 28th time in Major League history that the leadoff batter hit a home run, and it was the only run in the entire game. And it was the first time since Gerardo Parra did it for the Arizona Diamondbacks. Oh, that's right. It was 2013. So you were totally right about the Arizona connection.
Yeah, so it's an odd thing. I mean, think about it. That's way fewer times that's happened than no hitters, and even fewer than perfect games. So it was a rare occurrence. And the Giants just, you know, they faced some good pitching, and they have a depleted roster, and they pitched well that game. But for the week, it was not good, primarily because of two individual games against the Nationals. And, you know, I'm sure the Nationals felt really good coming into San Francisco and not only taking 2 out of 3, but quite honestly putting the smack down on the Giants. I mean, they really scored a lot of runs, and the Giants' ERA showed this week at a ballooned 5.20 for the week, which was second to last in all of baseball for the week. Way ahead of Cincinnati, who had like a 8-something ERA for the week. But it shows you
they're
how
horrible.
Bad Cincinnati
is. They're the
worst
team in baseball by a long, long mile.
They've actually had the worst start in like history comparatively to like some of these teams, like the 89 Orioles and a couple of these teams in the past that ended up having 105, 110 losses. They're right there with them. So
it's crazy. Those Orioles lost like 13 or something straight, or 15, 16 straight.
No, I think it was 19 or 21 straight. It was ridiculous. It was a major league record to start the season. But
right.
So, you know, the Giants had a bad week. They hit 233, I think, for the week, which is like, meh, you know, that's what they're going to hit. But the ERA is down to 3.06, or up to 3.06 for the year, which is fifth best in the majors. So I think this is just a blip on the radar, and it had a lot to do with injuries this week. COVID situation, Alex Cobb coming back off in the IL, you know, I know Disco got hurt, that was last week. Just a whole combination of factors that happened, and this even excuses Alex Cobb for 4 unearned runs when they later changed that hit to an error on Vossler. It was 5 runs in that first inning. Only one was earned before Cobb was pulled out. But I mean, I don't know, just a rough week. But I mean, what do you think besides, you know, some of the pitching that you saw? Well, I know you took some of the weekend off. I did too. But
I kept in touch. I watched, you know, the highlights and stuff. The condensed game, you know, that kind of thing. When it comes to the A's series, it made sense that they came home and beat the A's brains out in the first game in front of the fans, energized, long road trip, just took a nice game from the Brewers, and then they ran into the wall. I mean, they just had traveled to 4 different cities and just gotten home, and then playing the A's on that Wednesday game, it was just it was enough. They hit the wall. That's why that 1-0 game happened. That's why they couldn't hit the ball, and the fact that half their team wasn't even there. And then it's what it goes back to. Half the team's not there. You can't really account for the bullpen woes over the last couple days. Like McGee didn't look good yesterday. Beattie's had a rough again. There's just been some guys that Junior Marte gave up runs finally. There's been some guys that are giving up runs that, you know, necessarily wouldn't be in certain situations. Like McGee gave up runs in a game that was already kind of a blowout yesterday.
Yeah.
It wasn't like he was in there in a high leverage situation.
Yeah, so that was kind of like, get him out of your system now. I get it.
Yeah. And you don't mind that, like, as a fan, like, you don't mind that they, like, kind of all lose it at the same time, because we definitely have these stretches of time, and that road trip was a very good example of it, where the bullpen can be so good.
Yeah.
Because they had 2 bullpen games on that road trip where they were just phenomenal. So it stands to reason, you know, these guys are not going to dominate every time. It's going to even out at some point, and it just kind of did. I really think that this week was just cumulative events, you know, between – like I said, long road trip, running into a wall against the A's, and then you got the Nats, who have a chip on their shoulder after last weekend, getting swept in their own home park by the Giants. And, you know, the Giants coming in and honestly acting like the big bad Giants. And, you know, the Nats are like, we want to take it out on these guys. You know, we want to start hitting. And they took advantage of the opportunity. And they took advantage of the opportunity to beat the Sacramento River Cats in two or three games, because that's basically what the Giants trotted out there.
That's basically who they had. Like I said, for those of you who missed the top of the show, here are some players who actually saw action on the Major League Diamond, got in the box score this week. Luis Gonzalez, Mike Ford. I mean, I hadn't even heard of Mike Ford before this week. Jason Kerjan.
They said from like 2 days ago.
Exactly. Junior Marte, Mauricio Olivera, Ka'ai Tom, Luke Williams. I mean, holy crap, guys. I mean, in 5 years, we're not going to be like, oh, yeah, you know, Junior Marte, forever Giant. You know, it's not that's not going to be a thing. I hope these don't. I hope these guys don't end up in a trivia contest from like, you know, Thomas, you know, when he runs one of these Giants trivia things in a few years, you know. Who was on the roster in late April for the Giants? Was it Jason
Kerjan?
Well,
it's kind of like, you know, I liken some of these pickups. Do you remember Dan Uggla in 2014?
Of course.
He got picked up. He was like 0 for 9 with 8 strikeouts and just absolutely horrible for the Giants. But he won a ring in 2014.
He got a ring.
And so, you know, if the Giants do something this year, a couple of these guys that are just so random, yeah, they're going to get a ring. It's just so funny that's how baseball works. But you really just highlighted how bad the injuries and the COVID problems have been for the Giants and how much they've had to juggle. You know, that's why I make the River Cats joke. It's literally the farm system playing right now. They are shuffling every single day. They're moving people in and out. You know, you got guys quarantining in Washington. You got guys now quarantining in San Francisco. So it's not just the injury bug, it's the COVID bug. And frankly, I'd rather all this crap happens at the end of April than at the end of September. I mean, you can get through it right now. Winning 2 of 3 isn't bad. You stay afloat. That's basically 500 for the week. That's the best, you know, you can do without getting smoked. So you kind of got to give the Giants credit for pulling out a couple games. And had they had their full squad, they would have hung with the Nats. I mean, look at how many runs the Nats had to put up, like especially yesterday. Had the Giants had their normal ball club, their full arsenal of players yesterday, they could have scored 10 to 15 runs just as well. The ball was absolutely traveling around the yard. So you look at days like that and things like that, and no, the Giants were handicapped all week. And it's just frustrating as a fan to watch, because they were so good to start the season. But, you know, one week that's a hiccup, one small week that you got to deal with along the way, that's fine. Be healthy. The month of May, and I don't know if we'll talk about the schedule that much at all, but the month of May is a beast. You've got LA, you've got St. Louis, you've got Colorado a couple times. You got to face the Mets again. I think that's about sums up the month of May. Philly, Cincinnati is the only break. They get 3 games in Cincinnati. But literally every other series, Dodgers, Cardinals, Rockies, Padres, Mets, Phillies, are all against good quality opponents. So they need to get healthy, you know, going forward. So coming out of this 2-3, that's pretty good. You know, I'm impressed with what the Giants have done. And again, it's a testament to Farhan. I mean, he's able to pick up these guys who are going to make these impacts. Mike Ford drove in 2 runs yesterday. I mean, who the hell knew?
Yeah, Jason Kerjan had his first major league hit after toiling away for over 1,100 games in the minors. I mean, there's definitely things and silver linings to look at. And, you know, it's like, look, last year they won 107 and they had losing streaks of, you know, 3 and 4. I think their longest was 5 for the entire year or so. So, I mean, you know, it's going to happen. It's just inevitable. They're going to have bumps in the road. But speaking of COVID, which you referred to, of course, Yastrzemski is still quarantining in D.C. Apparently, he just has not been able to test negative. You have to test negative 2 times further than 24 hours apart. So it's not just one negative test. But now, Brandon Belt.
I have to ask, does that mean Yaz flew across the country while still infected?
No, he's still been, well, as of yesterday.
He came home yesterday.
Oh, did he? Okay, I missed that because I know of yesterday morning he was still in D.C. So
from what I heard, he's quarantining at a hotel near the ballpark. So
unless they could get him like a chartered flight or something where they could isolate him or put him in the back of the plane. Yeah, I don't know the details.
The key too is you need 2 negative tests, and maybe he tested negatively once and was able to fly, and then when he got back it tested positive again. You know, maybe the faint line showed up again. So
yeah, I'm maybe sure that's that could be a good point. Maybe it doesn't restrict you from flying.
I'm just saying, I'm not like putting blame on anybody. I'm just saying, like, you know, that sucks if that's what happened, because
Yeah, because now you have Brandon Belt, Dominic Leon, and Zach Littell. They all tested positive, so they're quarantining in San Francisco. And now the club, the players, have been asked, but not forced to, wear their masks inside indoor areas, but not in the dugout and not on the field, of course. Even PA announcer Ronnell Brooks-Moon tested positive and didn't announce games over the weekend against Washington. Now, we don't know the vaccination status of all the players. We do know that the Giants have hit 85% vaccination rate for the team. So we don't know specifically about these players, but assumedly they're all vaxxed and they're young and healthy, so they're going to be fine. Ronnell herself said she was vaxxed and she's just got, you know, mild to moderate symptoms, but it looks like she's going to be fine. So COVID is going to continue to rear its ugly head. And here's the thing, with Yaz going down, we knew there were going to be other players that tested positive. It's just the nature of the virus. And now with three more players testing positive, it's like, crap. I fully expect this week, Eric, there's going to be another two or three players that get hit. I hope it's one of the AAAers that already got sent down, not to be rude. But, you know, if it ends up being like someone from, you know, I mean, crap, you know, one of their starters, like what if it's Estrada or Bart or, you know, what are these guys? It's like, oh my God, what are they going to do?
There are certain guys they really can't lose right now. Like imagine if Crawford were to go down.
Oh, right now. Crawford's their anchor right now. I mean, I know he's the only back, like 230, but yeah. Still, yeah.
I
mean,
I think I remember reading Duggar. Not only is Duggar out on the 60-day IL, I think he caught the COVID as well.
Oh, I missed that. Really? Jeez.
Right, yeah. Which, I mean, it's just – and you're right. If you're vaxxed and boosted, it is somewhat manageable, the sickness. I myself had it after being vaxxed and boosted. I had that Omicron variant or whatever. And it knocked me on my butt for a couple of days. It wasn't like as huge and as deep as the sickness. My sister just had it. She was on a school trip with her daughter in Italy, and she caught it and had to quarantine in Sicily and then in Rome for the span of a week and a half. And I guess if you're going to have to quarantine somewhere, Sicily and Rome is a lot better than Washington, D.C. So, you know, I figure you got to appreciate that. But, you know, you make the point about them being healthy and being able to come back from it quicker, which is why you would think Yaz is going to be coming back pretty soon. It'll probably be out of his system. You know, and we hope Ronnell gets better, but it just sucks that it's like wildfire. It's like you said, it's going to touch a few more people.
Yeah.
And hopefully this is the only one they have to deal with this season. You know, these outbreaks have become fewer and farther between. So hopefully it's just one that they have to deal with now and they'll be able to shake it off. Because I remember back when this all started, they were one of the best teams at handling the health of the players and monitoring this stuff. And, you know, now obviously, I mean, not that they did anything wrong, but, you know, now they got to take precautions again. The clubhouse access was closed yesterday for media members.
Yeah.
Everybody was masked in the press box. It was, once again, those kind of protocols putting into place, and nobody wants that. So, you know, the sooner they can get it out and just get it out of the building, the better. And hopefully that does happen soon and it doesn't hang around all season, because that would suck. I mean, if it just keeps floating back and forth to people all season, the Giants are going to be shorthanded all year long, and Farhan's head's going to spin even faster.
Yeah, exactly. They held a few interviews in the dugout, and I've only covered one game this year, but it felt good to be back in the clubhouse after the game and everything. And yeah, they've already shut that down now because of this outbreak, which, I mean, look, it makes sense. They're not trying to be rude or anything like that. They're just being diligent. They don't want a reporter to bring it into the clubhouse. They don't want a reporter catching it from the clubhouse. So I fully understand it. It just sucks that the media just got access back, and now it's like a month into the season, less than a month into the season, it's already been shut down. And I think it's going to be this whack-a-mole the entire year. So God forbid there's another variant that sweeps across the nation. But, you know, hopefully it's just little flare-ups like this, and it won't be anything too serious. But before we get into transactions and other injuries and highlights and things of that nature, you know, a lot of people were making a big deal nationwide. I mean, they really made the nationwide papers when the Giants, you know, were kind of, you know, pushing the envelope on the unwritten rules of baseball. And we talked about it last episode. And here the Nats come into town and they're doing the same thing that the Giants did. And you know they were doing it because they wanted to kind of a little bit payback to the Giants. That's fine. here's the thing. Like, I love Twitter so much. I hate it a lot of times too, but I loved it so much with all these people going, how dare you hit a leadoff home run in the first inning? How dare you, like, score more than 7 runs? How dare you steal up by 5 runs? What are you doing? Gentlemanly people, you know, and it's the exact thing. Do you think, and we all know the answer to this question, that Gabe Kapler or any of the coaches or any of the players were butthurt about that this weekend? No, not at all.
I mean, yesterday was the perfect example. The Giants strung together a 5-run inning after the Nats had
down 8-0
earlier in the game. Right.
Exactly.
They totally made it a game. Had McGee been able to actually keep them scoreless, it would have stayed a game at that point. And the Giants were absolutely within striking distance. But, you know, McGee happened, and that didn't happen. But that's the whole point of doing those kinds of things in the seventh and eighth and scoring and trying to keep scoring, because you just never know. It's 2022 baseball, and anything can happen. But that's the way baseball is in general. Anything can happen. It's just weird that the Giants recognize that more than other teams. Like, there's randomness to the whole process. You know, all of our guys could lose it all of a sudden at the same time. All of our guys might be perfect together at the same time, like the Mets were the other night. You know, yeah. It can happen in any way, shape, or form. And the Giants acknowledging that, and the fact that it was the big bad bully thing, now they didn't even think twice about what the Nats did. No. That's why I think the Nats had a chip on their shoulder. You know, it was just really funny that they came in and were like, okay, we're not going to stand for this kind of crap that they did. And then they went out and did the same stuff. So it's like, copycat league. They're starting to see the team that was the best in baseball last year do stuff. They're going to copycat
but
it.
The thing is that I don't think the Nationals are going to do that to any other team the rest of the year. And that's the funny thing about it. It's kind of like when you like do something to someone and they do it back to you and go, yeah, how does it feel? And you're like, I'm not offended by that. That's fine. But the Giants did it for strategic reasons, for trying to wear out bullpens, because you don't know if a team can come back and score 5, 6, 7 runs in an inning, which was clearly shown several times this past week, right? The Nats are doing it not for strategy reasons. They're doing it to just push it back in the Giants' face. Like, we did it too. And it's like, okay, that's fine. We're perfectly okay with that. Because I guarantee you, later when the Nats are up 5, 6, 7 runs in the late game against anyone else, you will not see them steal a base. You will not see them bunt. They did this just to, like, put it back in the Giants' face. And the Giants don't care. That's the whole point. They're legitimate. They're being honest about why they're doing it in the first place. It's not to run up the score or to inflame other players and teams. It's literally, hey, look, you guys are pros. We're up by 6 runs. You guys can have a 5-run inning, and it's a ball game. So we're doing this now. And like you just said, I mean, the Giants are down 8-0, and you're like, oh, it's a blow. Oh, it's 8-5. It's 8-5 all of a sudden. Hey, now, we got a game. You know, it didn't work out, but, I mean, the reality is this is what happens. And so I think the Giants have only been proving their point, let alone, yeah, you know, whatever. And there's been a lot of national media that have been taking the Giants' side on this, going, hey, look, it kind of looked bad on the surface. And you look more into it and hear them, you're like, okay, I get it. I get what you're doing here. This makes sense.
That's how it felt for me looking into it more and listening to what the Giants had to say. And as an added bonus to it all, the Giants are living rent-free in other teams' heads. It's just absolutely fantastic that they're getting in the other teams' heads just by playing baseball. They're not doing anything out of the ordinary. They're not talking smack. They're not throwing at players. They're not they're not doing anything but playing baseball, and they're getting into the other team's head. So, you know, other teams now coming to face the Giants are cognizant of what the Giants are doing, and they're already on guard and prepared for it if they have to deal with it. So, again, just because of the Nats' response, they're starting to live rent-free in other teams' heads as well. And it's going to be fun this week, seeing the LA series, seeing if it gets to be a certain score. You know, we talked about it. Dave Roberts, he's come out and said things, you know, like, you got to respect some of the rules still. And, you know, I think that was what it was. And I think the Giants, if they get a lead, they're just going to try to work the Dodgers. And it'll make for some interesting theater. I don't think we'll run into anything this week. I mean, it's 2 of, what, 17, 18 games they play this season.
Yeah.
But somewhere along the way, we might run into something. And the seeds could be planted right now. So it's kind of nice they live rent-free in everybody else's head. And hopefully it helps them, you know, heading into this week against the Dodgers and Cardinals.
No, I love it. I love it. This is, you know, I can understand people's aversion to it prior if they weren't really thinking about it or hearing Kapler's explanation. But I think more and more people are getting it now. And I do wonder if there's going to be not a revolution, but just, you're going to see more teams do this. And then they're going to just going to point to the Giants, go, hey, it worked for them. So we're trying it out now. It's not, you know, it's kind of like, you know, let them play, right? You know, 20 yep. years ago, you don't see guys doing bat flips and pimping home runs as much as now. Like now, it's all over the place. And people aren't offended by it. You're like, all right, pimp your home run, run around the bases slowly, get your ass back in the dugout, let's play ball. And that's just the way it is. But, you know, 20 years ago, I was like, how dare you?
Well, I mean, baseball itself, you're right. That's just
that's an unwritten rule too, right? I mean, right. And it's shifted.
Exactly. That's one that was shed away over the last few years. Yeah. Baseball in general has shifted into a new direction. And like the fans that are angry about it are still stuck in the old generation of doing things. They don't see that progress has to be made in the game of baseball. If it's always played the same way, it's just always going to be the same thing. You know, during the 80s, base stealing was in and fast runners were a big thing. Back in the 60s, it was a big thing as well. But you don't see that kind of stuff anymore. So mm-hmm. baseball is ever evolving. It is always changing, and you got to get on board. And that's why you got to get on board with like the whole Farhan Kapler system, because they're not doing things the way Bruce Bochy used to do them. You know, Brian Sabian's not walking through that door, thankfully, because he would not survive with this kind of team. He was totally the right guy right. for the job back then, but it was such a different culture in all of baseball. The information age has kind of unlocked the door for the unwritten rules to get thrown out. And I'm here for it. I really am. I like the way the game is played now. I like watching things happen. And I love that the Giants are just kind of sticking in everybody's face and say, we don't care what you do. We're going to keep doing it. So
yeah, it's working for us.
It's kind
of
fun. Yep.
They just like point to their records and go, hey, look at our record. Look at our success.
Scoreboard.
Exactly. All right, so aside from the COVID list we just talked about, the injury updates are as followed. Of course, Joc Pederson went down with a grade 1 right adductor strain. That's the groin. And he's listed as day-to-day, which was good. The MRI results came back with just the grade 1. He may only be used as a pinch hitter in L.A., but you know, it's good to see that he's not necessarily going to be on the shelf for a couple of weeks. That's good to see. Austin Slater's also day-to-day with a right knee contusion. He suffered running into the wall. Chasing a fly ball versus Oakland. We'll see if he gets any action coming up soon. Lamont Wade Jr. is probably the closest to be activated. In fact, he was spotted in Los Angeles, according to Alex Pavlovich, last night. So he was saying either he had really bad travel issues or he's in LA for the series. So most likely, yeah, he's in LA for the series. And we'll see if he starts or if he just comes off the bench. Actually, who is... So we have Carlos Rodon and Webb going for the Giants.
Wood.
I didn't mean Webb. I was thinking W and I said Webb. Wood going for the Giants. So who's going for L.A.? Urias?
Yeah, and then TBD. So you would expect if Slater's healthy, he'll start against Urias because it's a left-handed starter.
Yeah.
So they're going to want to try to get him back out there, which actually gives Jock another day.
Yeah, exactly.
Right. And it gives Jock another day to kind of chill and get his stuff together. Jock did come out on deck yesterday, and the Giants didn't use him. I think if they got into a situation where a long ball would tie it, they might have gone to him yesterday, but I think that was the only situation. So hopefully a couple more days of rest help him out as well.
Yeah, that'll be good. So it'll be good to see late night Lamont come back this week. Evan Longoria may be assigned a rehabilitation stint this week and may return to the big club in mid-May. So maybe a couple of weeks he could be back. Tommy La Stella is running the bases and may start a rehab assignment this week as well and could be back as well by mid-May. So you might see both of those back sometime in a couple of weeks. Disco, the MRI confirmed just a right ankle inflammation, nothing structurally wrong. So he may be back in late May. So that's still a pretty long stint, you know, being out for a full month, which really sucks because he had a great year last year. And I know he struggled in his last start, probably because of this right ankle issue, but definitely need him. And then, of course, Steven Duggar went officially on the 60-day injured list and won't be back till late June after suffering a left oblique strain in New York.
Yeah, that's a huge one to me. Duggar was kind of the do-it-all guy for Gabe in the outfield right now, and he added a threat that when he was on the base paths, he might steal. He could take off at any time, and the guy does play a really good outfield. So to me, that was just losing that kind of a utility guy in the outfield that he can just move around while pinch hitting for other people. was a big loss for the Giants. I actually think that's part of what reflected over the last week. Had you had a piece like Duggar to move around a little bit more, they might have been able to get some better bats in the lineup. But, you know, that one sucks. And it's nice to see the vets coming back, Listel and Longoria.
Yeah.
But, you know, honestly, Vossler, I know he didn't necessarily play the best yesterday, but he's been pretty solid at third base. He's made a couple of really, really nice plays, barehanded, charging and barehanding a play, cutting across the diamond in front of the shortstop. He's really good at that play so far from what I've seen. So I don't think they lose much having Vossler at third base. It's much better than having somebody like Wilmer Flores over there. So I'm glad to see he's been pretty decent as a fill-in so far. But it'd be fantastic to get Longoria and his right-handed bat back in the lineup. That's a real big key for the Giants.
Yeah, no, that's massive. I mean, they're just so weak on right-handed hitting right now, so they definitely need him back. Transactions. Oh, my Lord, what in the hell do I have in front of me? This is copy.
If you need to stop talking and take a breath, I'll keep going if you need.
I think Eric's going to help me out on this one, but it was a very busy week for Farhan and company. I'm going to start kind of in chronological order from April 25th when we last recorded. But the Giants recalled third base Luke Williams from Sacramento. Of course, they put Yaz on the 10-day COVID list or injured list for COVID. They recalled Kervin Castro from the River Cats. They made a trade on the 26th with the Seattle Mariners to get third baseman Kevin Padlow. Now, what's really interesting about him, and he was traded for cash, by the way. There's been several of those transactions this week, which is pretty cool.
Yeah.
Farhan just opens up his wallet and is like, hey, you got an extra utility infielder? Here's some, you know.
I flippin' love it.
It's so cool, right?
I'm a huge fan. I mean, literally.
I know.
I'm a huge fan.
It's like a free player. Deep into
this. Right. Before we get deep into this, all these trades that they're making, they're not losing talent.
Exactly.
They're just acquiring people for cash. It's fantastic. It's great to be one of the haves, isn't it?
No, I think this is great. And he's immediately paid dividends, at least in AAA. Yesterday, Kevin Padlow hit not one, not two, three bombs in one game for Sacramento against Albuquerque and the Isotopes. Now, what's really funny is that when he was with the Mariners AAA team, he had three home runs on the season so far. He hit all three in Albuquerque. So he has all six of his home runs this year are against one team in their ballpark. So I don't know why he likes Albuquerque. He says he loves hitting there. So we'll see how he does when he gets back to Sacramento. But don't expect him coming up anytime soon. I'm just saying that it was really great to see this guy, you know, put three out like that. They also put Zach Littell on the COVID list. They claimed Darren Nunez off waivers from the Dodgers. This is a guy who just had Tommy John surgery. And like right when he had surgery, the Dodgers were like, bye. The Giants went, oh, we'll take him. We'll pay him for this year. No problem. So he's obviously, you know, out for a year. But he had some good stuff. He has he had a few stints in the major leagues. So he does not have bad stuff. And, you know, this day and age with Tommy John, Eric, I mean, so many of these guys are coming back stronger than prior to Tommy John. So he could be an interesting left-handed pitcher down the road.
They released him.
Oh, did they already? Oh.
I swear to you, on Friday, the Giants, when
they did.
When they put Belt and Leon right on here. IL and all that. Yep.
Shows you like how much I'm reading everything I copy and paste.
Oh, look, there it is. So long. I didn't see it there either. Oh, that's so funny.
Okay. Well, there's a big article on him too when he was picked up. So, well, that's my bad.
I mean, I was with you when I saw him. I was like, ooh, interesting prospect. But all these friggin' injuries kind of forced the Giants' hand, which sucks.
Yeah, because they put him on the roster. So I guess it did force their hand with all these injuries. Okay. Well, sorry, Darren. Darian, I thought you were with the team. Anyway.
Nope. Forever Giant
for like a hot 3 days, I guess, as he's recovering from surgery. Oh, poor dude. Oh, man. All right. So then they optioned Padlow. We just talked about him. They had DFA Jalen Davis, of course. He had been really the first Farhan signing that they kind of lost. Like not a big signing, but just someone who showed some promise. He definitely had some pop, but he was DFA'd and the Red Sox claimed him. So he's now with the Boston organization. They did option Jacob Unis, who had a great stint up here. He was pitching his butt off for the Giants, but he was optioned back to Sacramento. They selected the contract of right-handed pitcher Mauricio Olivera, who did get some action this week, and as well as Ka'ai Tom, and then Jason Krazan. So I'll let Eric kind of take over from there. That was all on the 29th.
Yeah, and that led to this was all leading up to that national series, because then Brandon Belt was put on the COVID list. And because of those flurry of activities, Belt went on the COVID list, Leon went on the COVID list, and they had to option Tom back to the Rivercats. They traded – oh, my God. They because they had to do that, they released Darian Nunez in the middle of all of this.
Yeah.
So that was where his release came in, was when Belt and Leon went on to the COVID list. And then they followed that with another trade, cash consideration sent to the Marlins for shortstop Easton Diaz. And I'll be quite honest with you, I'd never heard of the guy. And I'm in my group chat with the Giants chatter admins, and like four of them are like, oh yeah, I had that guy in a fantasy league at some point. I'm like, how do you guys know who the hell this guy is? I've never heard of him. It's like so impressive. Like, you know, I don't know how they know that, but anyways, that totally struck me. Kervin Castro got sent back down yesterday. Alex Cobb was activated, so Kervin Castro got sent down for him. And then today, because the rosters are going from 28 to 26, yep, even though the pitcher limit is still 14, I believe, right now for the month. I believe they extended that part. But the roster went from 28 to 26 today, Monday, May 2nd. So the Giants sent Junior Marte and Jason Krzan back down. So Jason Krzan, congratulations. See you later.
Yeah.
So,
right?
I mean, it's not often you get to make two roster moves without corresponding moves, and that's what happened today with them sending these two guys down. And it just kind of sucks that Krzan's the guy that is the low man on the totem pole. He gets the short end of the stick. Thank you for your service for 1,100 games. Hopefully you'll get another cup of coffee later this season.
I'm hoping.
If the Giants get healthy, he's not coming back.
No, that's the thing. Now that the roster is subtracted by two, it's going to be 26 the rest of the year. And that was really one of the only reasons him and a few, you know, obviously another person throughout the month were brought up.
But hey, Beedy made the cut. Beedy's still on the team right now for everybody who still wants to pull for Tyler Beedy, because, you know, yeah.
Yeah. And we'll see, obviously, with Longo and LaStella potentially coming back. Lamont Wade, we don't know what's going to happen, who's going to go down for him. So there's a lot of other shoes to drop. I mean, we're talking about guys like Mauricio Dubon and company, although they may survive because of this rash of COVID and injuries. He still may stick around on the roster for an extra few weeks. We'll see, but it's going to be...
You're totally right, though. They're going to need somebody for Wade tomorrow. Those two roster moves aren't it for the week. They're totally going to have to make corresponding
Wade's
move.
Yeah, Wade's activated, assumedly, tomorrow. They're going to have to make a move. So, it's going to be interesting to see. I'm not going to speculate on whom right now, but it could be someone, you know, like a Dubon or whatever. But I will give Jason Krzan his due. I just put it up on the live feed right now, but... He's 1-for-8 on his major league career, but this is a guy who's 32 years old. Most have given up by then because they needed to find another job, right? They can't live on a minor league salary for this long. But over 1,130 career minor league games and not one game in the majors, but he finally got his chance, and this was against the Nationals yesterday in the bottom of the fifth.
Hit for Krzan. How about that? His first ever.
Waited a long time for that. And he beat 95 right on the inside corner, just below the hands. And Kristen is a happy, happy girl.
So that's just really cool. I mean, I love to see that.
With 11.
As the commercial comes up there. But, I mean, that's... I saw the tweet later. It was his ball framed in a box, and they put the little custom, you know, first major league hit, May 1st, 2022, against the Washington Nationals. And that's something he can treasure now the rest of his life and tell his grandkids and show his grandkids, even if he never gets another day in the major leagues. I mean, it's not the only reason he continued on, but it certainly is one of the reasons he continued on.
Right.
Is to get that shot.
It's got to feel, it's got to feel like a crowning achievement, regardless of what happens the rest of his career. And it's one of those things. Lucius Fox on the other side. The kid got his first major league hit against the organization that first signed him. I thought that was kind of neat symmetry. I didn't mind that happening. You know, good for him.
No, not at all. Not at all. Another highlight for the week, of course, is Jason Vossler. You just mentioned he's been playing well this week, despite the error yesterday, which wasn't great. But he's made some other great stops, and he's hit two bombs already, including the Giants' first semi-sort of splash hit of the season.
It's that one high and deep to right field. Soto watching, and it is gone! A towering home run, Vossler, and it bounces into San Francisco Bay. Maybe a Pirate will get it.
Oh, it's not Vossler,
just a Giants fan.
Totally don't get the Pirate reference.
I know. I don't know why he said a Pirate, but...
Right? I have no idea where that came from. I'm still not sure. Flem said it bounced. I'm still not sure. It's really tough, even on replay, to see where the ball hit anywhere over there.
Twitter like said it was the son. First splash hit of the year, so I have to assume someone confirmed it did not bounce. But you're right. I didn't see a replay. There may have been another shot that I never saw. There probably is, from the right field pole, you know, way up on the top of the stadium. They usually have that one, the Barry Bonds camera. That one, you know, shows it, and I just haven't seen it. But, he hit that 376 feet, which is, like, just maybe far enough to get to the water. I'm not sure. I'd be interested to see, like, what's that distance, you know, to the port walk? I don't think I've ever seen those distances. But
I mean,
exit velo is 104. Yeah.
Right. The physics of it comes into play with the trajectory of the ball at that time. And yep, baseball always can be broken down to numbers.
Baseball. And then Bart for this week went 3-for-9 with a bomb. He's struggling, but you know, he's got little signs here and there. I know a lot of people want to cut ties already and send him down. It's like, what are you guys talking about? Like, you just want to call up Hunter Bishop already? And like, yeah, well, not, I mean, or Patrick Bailey already. I mean, like, come on guys, just pump the brakes a little bit. I mean, it's like, he's just like the new shinies. If they don't perform right away, it's rah, cut them, let them loose. It's like, just chill out. So I am worried about his strikeout total. That's what's really probably most glaring about Joey Bart right now, is that when he connects, yeah, he mashes it, but he just doesn't connect very often.
And it's not like Kurt Casale is tearing the cover off the ball either. The guy's hitting like one something, I'm sure. I don't have it in front of me. I went off that page, but Kurt Casale is not doing much either. So you need Joey Bart to sit there and learn, you know. It's like I said, it may be 2020. We have all this information, you know, so everybody wants things to happen now, but there are some things that do take time.
Yeah.
You do have to be patient with baseball players. Joey Bart, what is Casale hitting? Casale is hitting 167.
Yeah. Kind of where he was last year at the beginning of the year. Remember that? He was like down to 125, and then he had this tear, and he brought his average all the way up to like 220, and people are like, whoa, he's hit like 400 the past month. So that's just... Again, guys,
that's baseball. That's averaging.
Most experts agree that to even assess a baseball team and what they might likely be for that entire season, you got to hit the 40 game mark, right? A quarter of the way through. That's kind of the traditional measuring stick. They're only halfway there. They're at 22 games right now. And that goes with the players as well. So, I mean, the players need to have enough reps and at-bats. The fluctuation in statistics is so crazy right now, where a guy goes 2-for-3 and their average jumps 30 points. I mean, that's where we are in the season. So you can't just look at a batting average. Oh, he's only hitting 210. It's like, yeah, but if he gets three hits tomorrow, he's hitting 260. So don't freak out about this yet, guys. Like, wait till we're in like June 1st. Then you start going, all right, he's got, you know, 150 at bats. Now we start thinking about it.
I've got some stats to totally back that up. You know, we revere last year's team as amazing. Oh, my God. They won 107 games. Greatest win total in Giants history. Holy crap, they did it. And they mashed the cover off the ball last year. Well, so far in 2022, the Giants are higher in runs scored. They have 24 home runs this year. Oh, they had more home runs last year. Good job, Eric. But they have more runs scored. They have a higher batting average. They have a higher on-base percentage. They have a higher OPS this season than they did last season through the first 22 games. So even with this last week and the injuries that have beset them, they're still outperforming a team that won 107 games last year. And it's just, it's kind of crazy to think about when you say it. And that's why you need a bigger sample size. The Giants are built for an entire season. They really are. They're built as a factory. They're built as guys that come on through and fill in their roles. And then you find the lightning in a bottle where you can. and the Giants are doing that kind of a thing. So over the course of the season, it'll play out in their favor, and you know that's just part of the ebbs and flows of it. It's amazing that they're a better offense this year than last year, because it already feels like
right.
This past week was a stretch where they were just dead. There was a time at the beginning of the season against the Padres, and then when they first headed on the road, they weren't really hitting the ball that well. Against the Mets, they didn't hit the ball that well. So we didn't really even think the Giants were hitting that well this year. And then suddenly I started digging in the numbers. I was like, oh, okay, that's pretty good. It's not just Jock Peterson doing stuff. It's,
yeah.
You know, Jock one day, Tyro another day, Wilmer another day. Wilmer's a guy. I should have picked him for my player of the week just because he's had a good season so far. Wilmer's played well. I didn't, but Wilmer's played really well so far this season. He's another guy. You know, it's part of the plug-and-play attitude of the Giants, so... Just some stats to show that, you know, if we're worried about this team not equaling last year's team, well, honestly, they've surpassed them already in stats. Yeah. And if that pace keeps up, they're going to win a lot of games again.
Yeah, exactly. And, you know, we have to look back at last year's World Series champions, right? The Atlanta Braves. I mean, they were basically under 500, 70 games into the season, almost halfway through the season. They were under 500, guys. They were 8 games back of the Mets at that time. And they came roaring back and obviously had an incredible season after a few trades. That's where they got Jock Peterson and others. And, you know, obviously ran through the playoffs, including beating the Dodgers. Thank you. So, you know, it's early, guys. Don't freak out about these players. They're going to start DFAing them right away.
Right. Yeah, Pats in 2019 were a crap team. Remember they had like a losing record through 60 games in the Nationals, and then they beat the Astros in the World Series.
Yeah, they did the same thing. They had the same slow start as the Braves did, or even worse. Yeah, in 2018 or 2019, and then ended up running through the Astros and won the World Series. So again, just it's same with the players. Now, if it's July 1st and Bart is hitting 150 with 250 strikeouts, and that's a problem, but. Let's just wait, okay? He was mashing down in AAA, and I don't believe he's going to be a quad A player forever and ever and ever. He's shown signs. He went 107 at-bats without hitting a home run, and now this year he's got 3 or 4 already. So, I mean, he's already showing changes like that and development in that regard. His catching ability and framing, according to the pitchers, has gotten much better. I mean, it got so bad last year. Johnny Cueto refused to, he didn't want Bart to catch him. He wanted only Casale. So, you know, he's made a lot of strides lately, and he's young. And so, you know, he's got to learn, and he's thrust in there. And the Giants have a lot invested in him. So they're not going to send him down to AAA for more seasoning at this point. It's his time.
He's third on the team in walks. You know, that's not too bad at all.
No.
You look at something like that, so it shows that at least he does have the eye and the possibility to turn it around. But he and Ruff both have 24 strikeouts to lead the team. Boy, that's another guy, Ruff. He's having a tough year. You hope May can turn around.
Yeah. Literally a rough April. Because he, was signed to the 2-year contract because he had a fantastic year last year. And again, still early, still young season. And the thing is, he's had his batting average with balls in play as BABIP is extremely low, which suggests because you also look at his other metrics like exit velocity and things like that, it's pretty high. He's making good contact a lot of the time, more often than you would expect for someone to have that low batting average, meaning he's basically having bad luck right now. Not saying he'd be hitting 350 without it. I'm not saying that at all. But statistically, everything being normal, his batting average should be higher. He should have a few more hits in there, and he doesn't. So sometimes these early numbers, again, not only are they early, but they could be misleading if, you dribble one to third base and you get the infield hit, or you smoke one to left field and he dives on your 105 exit velo, right? I mean, that's just the way it is. And a couple of hits one way and a couple of outs the other way, you know, maybe that's a 4-hit difference and it makes, 50-point difference in your batting average right now. So
it's cut down on his ground balls. It's strikeouts and flyouts that are killing him right now.
It is. The swing and miss, I mean, he's got hard contact, but he swings and misses a lot too, like a lot of traditional power hitters, but he was much better last year on that.
He got fooled on a pitch that just fell off the table yesterday with the bases loaded. He absolutely had a chance to help the Giants get back into that game.
Yeah.
It was a moment where he might have come through last year, and just the way he's scuffling right now, I immediately in that moment, I'm like, okay, I can go do what I was going to do. This inning's over. And that sucks, but, you know, hopefully Ruff turns it around.
Yeah. All right, we're getting close to the end of the show right here. We have a couple segments left. One of them is Who's Your Player of the Week? For myself, I'm going to go with the aforementioned Jason Krzyzan just because again, paying his dues in the minors for, you know, 10 plus years, 1,100 games, finally got his call to the show, got his base hit. So I really hope to see him again at some point. Well, and that's the thing, right? You hope as a Giants fan you actually don't see him the rest of the year, because that means more injuries. But
no offense, man. Like,
no offense. But yeah, but obviously I wish the best for him. But anyway, player of the week, just because of that notable thing. What about you?
I'm going to go with the combination of the non-players, Farhan and Scott Harris, because they've had to juggle so much this week. This has been a very difficult week transactionally for the Giants. And if there's two guys that can keep up with that kind of business, it's absolutely those two. So I'm going to kind of pass off, since nobody really had a standout week as a player, which is why it was easy for you to take Chrisanne. Yeah,
I know. That's like no one else.
Right. That's why, you know, bad week. I guess we could go Rodon for how he pitched against the A's. But even then, it was, you know, his, quote, worst start of the season, which was still a fantastic start. But
yeah,
I took Rodon, you know, another time. So Farhan and Harris juggling everything. And seriously, just accumulating this talent. I alluded to it earlier. You know, accumulating talent without having to give up talent is just a huge luxury to be able to have. Frankly, back in the 60s, that's what the Yankees used to do. They used to buy their players from, like, the Kansas City A's, because the A's were such a bad team during that time. And that's how they got, like, Roger Maris and other players that they had during those historic runs. And the Giants are kind of doing that similar thing right now, is that they're just sending cash to teams that need to infuse some cash into their team. And the Giants are like, sure, you can have some money. And, you know, we don't know how much it is. I don't know what cash considerations means. You know, I have no idea what the cost is. It could be $500,000. It could be $5,000. We literally have no idea. It could be a bag of balls. But it's a real credit to the front office to accrue talent without having to give up talent. And I really, it was a tough week. I could not imagine having to deal with everything they dealt with this week. And they're lucky to have the days off that they've had around it to kind of, you know, make it a little easier to handle. But, you know, as an organization, this has got to be one of the most tumultuous weeks they've had in the past, you know, probably during the whole Zaidi era. So my hat's off to them for handling it pretty decently so far.
Yeah, and as we go into the next segment, why are we going to win it all? I was going to bring that up. Just really the front office, right? The front office is going to keep this ship from sinking. They're taking on water right now, and they've got some big buckets, and they're just, you know, making sure the ship doesn't go down. They're making sure we're still making forward progress, and they just do an incredible job coming up with, you know, maneuvers that you don't even see coming. And so many of these maneuvers have turned out to be just fantastic. You just putting their fingers in the dike, you know, just making sure that this thing doesn't completely explode on them. You know, they don't rely on just one or two superstars and then the rest of the roster that they don't make any moves on. They are just next man up mentality. It's always been like that. Finding a diamond in a rough, even if it's the guy's only a diamond for a week, they seem to be able to do that.
And Mike Tauchman making incredible. The catch last year.
Yes.
Perfect that example.
That literally saved a game against the Dodgers, which was the difference in the season, was one game. That was a two-game swing. The Dodgers would have won the division. So, yeah, you're right. I mean, these indelible moments that maybe it's a player that's only up for a little bit, but they make impacts on the season, and that's what they're doing this year. I mean, Vossler was great this week. You know he made the error, but, I mean, he's being a serviceable backup, right? So we saw what's-his-face? Sorry, blanking out already. The pitcher, the middle relief pitcher, Jacob Yunus, come up and plug like 10 innings worth of pitching this past week or two. It's just been fantastic.
The shutout innings, too, I think, the whole time.
Yeah, they were shutout innings. That's what I mean. He's just been incredible. And, you know, it's like, thank you. Go back to Sacramento now. So that's just the way.
He's going back to get another start, I think, to keep him loose for the next bullpen start the Giants need.
Exactly. He's going to be up and down several times. So it's going to be interesting. But, yeah, front office is going to be one of the reasons. How about yourself?
I'll say because of the right-handed bats. I'll say Darren Ruff will figure it out and turn it around at some point. And Evan Longoria will come back and stay healthy for the rest of the season. Because, frankly, Longoria's injury last year was just a freak accident.
That was.
And then this year, I know he's getting older, but he's had this all the slow time to ramp up for the season. So you'd like to think he could put in a solid 4 or 5 months in a row instead of having to do the whole 7-month, 8-month grind that everybody's doing right now. Mm-hmm. So I'll say on the backs of the right-handed power hitters, Darren Ruff and Evan Longoria, coming through down the stretch and making things happen for them. Because, I mean, they do run into a decent amount of left-handed pitching in the West. They haven't been facing it as much because they've been facing teams from other divisions, and they've had to stay lefty heavy. But when the Giants go right-handed heavy, I think Ruff and Evan Longoria will be keys to that cog. So
for sure,
I'll give a nod to the right-handed hitters at this point and say that's why they'll win it all.
Well, coming up, of course, two big games down in Chavez Ravine starting tomorrow. We have Rodon versus Urias, and then, of course,
that's a great matchup.
Oh, it's going to be fantastic. Rodon has just been lights out this year, and it's going to be really interesting to see how the Dodgers handle him and if Rodon is what he's been already. Urias, he's normally obviously a great pitcher. He led the majors in wins last year, but of course he plays for one of the best teams in baseball. But he's had, you know, a really bad start this year, and we'll see what happens. So stats aren't sterling right now, but he's had some
Get
great
to him
starts
now,
this year,
you know.
Yeah, he's had some great starts already. So he's kind of hit or miss at the beginning of the season. So hopefully, you know, any right-handed lineup, which, again, they're missing some of these guys, but hopefully Ruff and company can take care of business. And, you know, maybe Rodon goes 5 or 6, so he gives up one. That'd be fantastic. But on the flip side, the Giants are going to have to score more than one, clearly, to win this game. They're going to have to be at least in the 3-4-5 territory to give the Giants a chance. But we'll see what happens. And then against St. Louis comes into town for 4 at Oracle. And during the weekend, May 7th on Saturday, is going to be Buster Posey Day. So I haven't read what kind of pomp and circumstance there's going to be, but the Giants often hold those ceremony details close to the vest. But the Giants always do a great job. And if I could swing it with my schedule and my leg, I would love to cover it. But, you know, we'll see, because assumedly he's going to be there, obviously.
Yes. He was there yesterday.
Oh, was he? I missed that. Oh, no kidding.
Yeah.
You know, and who knows how many more times he's going to visit the ballpark, you know? I mean, he's a guy that's going to be with his family, and he's just not baseball dude anymore. So we'll see. You know, we'll see him for the 2012 World Series reunion maybe this year, the 2014 team reunion in 2 years, and then after that,
right.
Who knows, right?
Who knows?
But
maybe
that's
if they retire
cool.
his number or something like that. I don't know. That's a possibility we've never even discussed.
Yeah.
We joked around before the season started that Buster, the only game he's going to watch all year is going to be that one game that he's at. But apparently he proved us wrong. He was at the game yesterday, so I think he was in town to hang out with Bochy. I know Boch and Flan.
Yeah.
Filmed some commercials for some people. So I don't know if Buster was in town for all that. And Bochy was at the park this weekend, too. So it's entirely possible it was that kind of a thing. Like, you know, they're going to come in and see. And the Poseys are probably staying here for a little bit. I mean, and then doing Buster Posey Day and heading back.
Yeah. And then one last note. We forgot to mention this last week. But, of course, with the first base coach being ejected, I think that was in New York, I believe. Giants coach Alyssa Nacken became the first female coach to coach on the diamond during a game when she filled in at first base. And so her helmet is going to the Hall of Fame after that, which I think is just really, really cool. So that little nugget came out this week, but we forgot to mention her participation in that kind of historic moment for Major League Baseball happened a couple of weeks ago. So pretty neat. Because, you know, normally she's one of the like 13 coaches that's just kind of in the background. She helps out with all sorts of stuff, but she's not an on-field coach. But she did fill in for, I think it was Richardson that game.
Yeah,
he was ejected.
Tossed for some technicality rule. So
yeah.
It leaves the question to the Giants doing
it. Was it set up? No, I'm just kidding.
I mean, it could have been. Like, honestly, I wouldn't put it past the Giants.
I don't care if it was. You know, it's like.
I don't either.
It was a way of doing it, you know, even if it was, and it doesn't hurt anyone. It does not hurt a single person. It's fine.
No.
It's fine.
The
you know.
The Atlantic League, the independent Atlantic League. Yeah, yesterday, Kelsey Whitmore started in left field for the Ferry Hawks. I do not know how she fared, but she was the first woman to start a game in Atlantic League history, which is it's not a Major League Baseball affiliated minor league. It is an independent league. And I've watched Atlantic League games. I've gone to Atlantic League games. They're not bad baseball, but it's just under basically the single A level if you're looking to classify it somehow. And so Kelsey Whitmore was the first ever woman to start an Atlantic game in history. So it might be the first in the minors. I'm not sure about that.
Yeah, that's. I think that was great. I read that. I didn't see her performance either, and we'll see how long she sticks with the club, and if she does, kind of how her performance is. Because, you know, one of the things that my daughter who plays high school softball has asked me a couple of times and is like, why don't you think – or do you think a woman is ever going to make the major leagues? And I am all for inclusion. I really, really am. But I told her, I said, you know, unless – The thing is that there are a lot of specialties in baseball, but you have such a large pool of international players, not just American players, but all over the place. Dominican, right? Even Europe now, Australia. We have a couple of stars in the league. The pool is just so large and the talent is so high. I said, I honestly don't see that happening anytime soon. I really don't. I'm not saying it couldn't happen for a cup of coffee. Either as legitimate or as a stunt, whatever it may be, you know, like some woman who comes up and she's like the best knuckleballer, like since Charlie Huff, right? Where it's not necessarily about pure arm strength or speed or bat speed or whatever. Maybe it's about that kind of technique where knuckleballers have basically died, right? There just really aren't any out there. What if there's some, you know, girl who's in the little leagues right now, whose dad is teaching her the knuckleball and she just perfects it over her lifetime and somehow grabs on with a minor league team and baffles, you know, half the hitters down there and somehow makes it. Other than that, I did tell my daughter, I said, I'm not trying to poo-poo the idea. I don't see it happening. Just kind of like, I don't see a woman playing in the NBA, right? I mean, it just size and strength.
That's tough.
In football, again, some people have pointed to kickers like soccer players, and that's happened in the collegiate levels, where you've had a woman be a collegiate kicker. Again, when you get into the NFL level, it's just the size, the strength, the power is just something that probably won't happen. There's not any woman I've read about that can hit a 63-yard field goal. So, you know, you have issues like that too. Again, not saying it's impossible, just highly unlikely. And I hate to say that. I would love to see it. And maybe this woman in the Atlantic League will be kind of a first step in that direction. But at least at the coaching level. She did, yeah?
Yeah, she got hit by a pitch.
I was about to ask if she got hit by a pitch or walked.
I can't find the box score on their website on my phone, but I did see in the write-up, as I was skimming it, trying to find the score, that she did reach base, but she got hit by a pitch. And she also made the first put out of the game. The first play of the game was a fly ball to her.
Nice. That's great. Yeah. So, I mean, I love to see this happen. But in the meantime, I mean, it's great to get women in on the coaching ranks. We've seen it in the NBA. We've seen it in football. And, of course, we've seen it on the baseball diamond. So I think that's all fantastic. There's so much talent and knowledge that a woman can bring in a different perspective sometimes to professional athletes. It could be all sorts of things, from technique things that they pick up that another person doesn't pick up. She played high-level softball for college, you know, so she knows a thing or two. So certainly knows a lot more about baseball than us schmucks at home who never played, you know, professionally or Division I or something like that. So you got to tip your hat, and I'm all for this. It's great, so...
Hey, that was a cool moment. I agree.
Yeah. All right. Well, that's going to do it for episode 250, kind of a mini milestone. And just to let you know, you can find all of our old recordings at torturecast.com or on Podomatic. It's all there. Yeah. If you go to podomatic.com/torturecast, you can kind of look back through the whole library. And I was taking a look at it. They don't add up how many hours have been recorded. They have each individual time, of course. I'm not going to go through and add it all up, but we do have over 300 audio recordings available. Even though this is episode 250, that's because we've done interviews and specials and bonus-sodes back in the day where we used to go to the park, and then go to Zeke's after and record a bonus-sode. We never counted those as actual podcasts with the numbers. So we actually have over 300 recordings online. Most of them are an hour to an hour and a half. So you do the math. We got over 500 hours of Giants baseball talk over the last 11 years. And that's crazy, Eric. I mean, that would take you about 12 weeks if you were working full-time 40 hours a week. It'd take you 3 months working full-time to make it through all those audio recordings.
I never thought about it like that. I really
didn't. Crazy?
I mean, 250s. Yeah, 250 is a neat little milestone. I know we partied it up for 100 and 200.
Yeah.
But 250, you know, a quarter to 1,000, like, if we make it to 1,000, that'll be something. We're going to be, like, I have gray hairs.
Be a lot older at 1,000, Eric, unless we start making five episodes a week. Yeah.
Oh, I don't think that's going to happen. I will have the sun wrinkles like crazy by then, I am sure.
You got a long way to go for that. Yeah. If it took us 11 years to do 250, that'll take us 30 more years. So, yeah, I'll be 78 when we're doing episode 1,000.
I'll be 73. I'll look like a baseball glove by then. I'll be all sunburned and wrinkly because, you know, I'm always out in the sun around here.
I don't know many 70-somethings that are podcasting these days.
But that's the thing. We're going to break through.
That's right.
Yeah, we're going to break through. We're going to still be around in 30 years.
That's why, yeah, we're not old, but we're too old for all this, like, TikTok stuff, you know? Like, everyone's like, TikTok and all that. I'm like, all right, whatever. I guess we could do a dance about the Giants or something.
But we are old. We're the old guard. I mean, like, all the
Doesn't
new podcasts
suck?
And all these, they're all young coming up, you know? Like, they're all hungry and not that we're not.
Yeah. No, it's true. It's true. Yeah. It's I started podcasting in various states back in 2007. And so, yeah, I was in my 30s then, you know, my mid to early 30s, and podcasting was brand new, sort of. And so I was like, oh, I'm the young one in the whole – no. I'm pushing 50 now.
I felt that way when I hooked up with you guys. I shared that anniversary recently. I, you know, and I said, I hope I don't suck. And here I am, you know, whatever, 9 years later, still being on the show. And what am I? I'm going to be 43 tomorrow. So, you know, I'm not the young pup anymore that I used to be at all.
Yeah, you know, you're just a long-term guest host. That's all you are. So
yeah, I'm just a fill-in. We should have made that a gag. We could have been running that this entire time.
Yeah. Eric joins us for his like 200th guest host appearance.
Joining us again, we have a special guest coming this week. Oh, it's Eric again. Hey, come back next week. We're gonna have an even more special guest.
It's all because
it's Eric again.
We can't get anyone else, but. Other than that.
Sorry. We tried to get Jock Peterson this week, but nope, here's Eric Nathanson again.
Oh, man. Yeah, we can only afford Eric.
Yep, our budget's only, you know, so big.
Oh, man, that's awesome. All right, well, that's going to do it for...
watches on a post-game show.
No, nothing like that. No dinners to Morton's or anything like that, so sorry, nope. Guys. All right, that'll do it for 250. You can follow us collectively at TorchCast on Twitter or individually at ChadK21. At Two Out Hits for Eric, that's with the number 2, and at Willie Dills, he had to go help his uncle move in northern Texas or something today. He had a whole rant that he wanted to go off on about Fairweather Giants fans and how they're reacting right now. He follows a lot of Reddit pages. I admit I don't because it kind of gets toxic once in a while. But so do a lot of these Facebook groups. Not Giants Chatter, by the way, which I know Eric wants to plug. Giants Chatter.
No, forget it. There's been people in Giants Chatter lately that are just so freaking negative. Like during this whole week of games, like cool it. Like this team. This have you not paid attention for the last 2 years? Like 1 week of bad baseball with half the team on the shelf. Like what kind of a fan are you? Like what do you think is going to happen? They're not going to win the World Series in April.
Not going to do it.
Sorry. Cut you off on anything you were.
No, not at all.
Extended to Giants chatter. It's just so frustrating to see right now. It's like, come on, guys. Like, just in general, baseball fans, I don't understand it. It's a 162 game season. We're not playing 7 game series against the Dodgers right now.
Marathon. Marathon.
This is the worst I've seen the Giants look in 10 years. Give me a break. Are you kidding me? Like, this is.
What?
This organization.
They're 22 games in, right? They play almost that many games alone versus the Dodgers, alone versus the Padres, alone versus the Diamondbacks and Rockies. Like, come on, guys. Like, let's just pump the brakes a little bit.
You're telling me 2019 and 2018 weren't worse? Are you freaking kidding me? I would trade what we have now for anything with the Giants as far as, like, hope with an organization. This is the first time as a fan I've just felt consistently solid about the front office, the moves that are made, the product on the field. You yep. can't say that throughout the Giants' history. I mean, if you just happen along Giants fandom in 2010, you just think everything's all wine and roses. No, the Giants did not know how to get their crap together. For years and years and years and years. Finally, we have a front office who knows what they're doing. They yep. have an idea. They see the future of baseball and they want to be it. Get on board. Be okay with the losses because bumps along the way are just going to keep them going forward.
No, it's but Joe from Santa Rosa knows better. They know how to handle this team.
And we're not saying that we know better, but I mean, like,
no, not at all. But we know enough to know that we don't know better. That's what I'm saying.
Right. Use your eyes, though, and let's see what, you know, the world is telling you. You know, if your team keeps winning games, what the fuck are you complaining for? They're on a 110 win pace or some crap like that now. I mean, it's ridiculous. Yeah. Let them be. They're fine. It's probably like 101, but, you know, and it's just, It's a new wave of Giants fan. I got to get used to it. They're just expect greatness all the time, you know, and it just makes me wonder, did they have a brain fart for 2-3 years at the end of the Bochy era and forget how bad it could be? Because it was bad at the end of the Bochy era. And we should be happy with the way it's been here, Kapler. He was one game under 500 in the strike-shortened season, COVID-shortened season.
Yeah.
And then he won 107 games last year.
Yeah.
They were 120 and 60 over a 180 game span or some crap like that. Like, yep. that's a 667 winning percentage.
Yeah, winning that's 2 out of 3, ridiculous. Literally, throughout that yes, whole stretch, which is insane.
Constantly. And that's all we talked about last year and even to start this season. Giants are doing it again. They're winning series, winning series, winning series. That's the formula. You can't take it game by game as a Giants fan watching this team. You got to go series by series, trip by trip, month by month, because that's mm-hmm. how they're going to take the approach. And if you treat a game in April like Game 7 of the World Series, then please, please seek medical attention so you don't have a heart attack, because I'm really concerned about your health, because I don't know how your blood pressure handles it.
They're 14-8, everyone. They have the fifth best record in the National League, which, by the way, is only a game and a half behind the Mets, right? You got the Mets, right. Dodgers, Brewers, Padres, and then the Giants. The Giants have won 6 out of the last 10. The Dodgers have won 6 out of the last 10. The Giants were exactly 14-8 after 22 games last year when they won 107 games. They're on pace to still win over 100 games at this clip. I mean, it's okay. Now, yes, if the next 3 weeks they win 3 games, that's a problem, and then we can start getting a little mild, little concerned. But everyone, even if they play 500 this week, a long season, it's okay. Yep. It's okay, everyone.
500 this week would be good because you play two quality teams. Yeah, 500 this week would be really good.
Yeah, yeah. St. Louis is 13-9 right now, so yeah, they're not doing too shabby themselves. But all right, back to social media. You can also like us on Facebook, of course, and find all of our content at TortureCast.com. So we already mentioned Giants chatter, but anything else going on, Eric?
Nope, nothing doing. Just keep listening. Thank you to the listeners. We appreciate it because, you know, we like pumping them out during the season, and we appreciate the downloads. It's been a good season so far.
Yeah.
Like, you know, 14-8 helps, and, you know, hopefully more come on the bandwagon. Hopefully we didn't just drive away all of our new listeners by telling them to calm the F down.
But no.
I'm sorry. Then we're not your cup of tea. There are plenty of other Giants podcasts out there. So we do appreciate the longtime listeners and everybody who has hung around and does enjoy TortureCast.
I would say we are rational/wise, patient Giants fans. That's what we are.
Patience is a really key word when it comes to us, because we totally are good with the bumps and bruises. It's going to happen, you know. But I've never been this – I don't know about you, but I've just never been this excited about the organization, and I'm sure you see it the same way.
Absolutely. And, guys, we didn't stop this podcast in 2015, 2017, 2018, 2019 – during those awful, awful, awful years where they were well under 500, we still recorded almost every week. So we're not fair weather fans. We've seen the good. We've seen the bad. I was there, you know, in the late 70s when I started my Giants fandom as a little kid, all the way till now. So, I mean, there's some bad teams out there. This is not a bad team. It's going to be okay. It's going
to
be okay.
Yeah, we've pulled an Andy. We crawled through the river of shit to go down to Z Watanejo. We have absolutely pulled an Andy. So we've been around for a minute.
Just a bit, yeah. So five games is not going to make any difference, but
nope.
Oh, man. All right, everyone. We'll have a fantastic week. Hopefully the Giants will take a little two-game set in L.A. and do well, and we'll talk to you next Monday for episode 251. Until then, see you later. A-boom.
A big thank you to everybody for listening to the TortureCast, the podcast by and for fans of the San Francisco Giants. Follow us on Twitter at TortureCast. You can also like us on Facebook or check out our blog at TortureCast.com. I also want to say thank you to Ashcon and Bailey for letting us use their song Feeling Like a Giant for our intro. For Ben Lee and Chad King, my name is Willie Dills saying, we'll see you next time.